Hi, welcome back to the Oasis Podcast. I'm Carson.
And I'm Peyton. So today we're going to do a little bit of a play-in preview. So the playoffs haven't officially started yet, but two of the play-in games are tonight.
Yeah.
So today, for the play-in, we have the Hornets and Pacers, and then we also have Wizards Celtics. So we have the Eastern Conference matchups going on. So Carson, first of all, what do you think of the play-in? Because I think that it isn't necessarily exactly part of the playoffs, right? Because they're not... Well, I don't know necessarily what I'm trying to say, but I feel like it shouldn't necessarily be counted as the playoffs, because you still need to earn your spot to be a 1-8 seed, right?
It's not because you're playing to get into the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
So it shouldn't really be a playoff game if you're playing that game to make your spot in the playoffs.
That's even in the name, play in. And so, I think the argument can kind of be made for both sides, but I guess we're both in agreement here, so I think we can kind of move on to the first matchup. So today we have the Hornets and the Pacers. So I feel like two teams that are kind of different ends of the spectrum last year. So last year you had the Hornets. They ended up getting the number 3 pick in the NBA draft. They were a lottery team. It's like LaMelo Ball. And that was kind of the big reason, I think, for their turnaround. He's might win rookie of the year. Him or Anthony Edwards. He's definitely a top 2 rookie this year.
Yeah.
And he's kind of, I think he's a great player. He's kind of revamped this Hornets team. Last year they had Devontae Graham and Terry Rozier, and people were kind of unsure if both as point guards could really play together or how they might fit. And now they've been playing, they had another point guard in the draft. He's obviously bigger, but same skill sets as Devontae Graham and Terry Rozier. And so there's kind of some questions about how they would fit together, how they do with less bigger bodies on the court, because Graham and Rozier, definitely smaller guys. But I think it worked well enough. I'm not sure if all three were starting the entire season, or if they had maybe Devontae Graham come off the bench for a couple games, but it definitely, I'd say, was a big success. They also have had the Mikal Bridges throwing down some thunderous dunks, and their announcers have been getting pretty into it. Have you kind of been seeing what the announcers have been doing?
Yeah,
it's like
pretty crazy.
Yeah, they've just been hyping up these kind of average plays.
Yeah,
so bringing a lot of energy, but. Yeah, and then going on to the other team, the Pacers, we have a team that lost Victor Oladipo in the James Harden trade, got back Caris LeVert, who unfortunately they found had cancer. Good thing he's back now, but it's reported that he's not playing in the playing game today because of like knee soreness or something like that. So they're going to be without LeVert, but the by far the best player this season has been Domantas Sabonis, who has kind of been doing what he's always been doing. He's not the best defender. He's kind of more of an old school guy, but he's still putting up the points, the rebounds. He's the assists. He's gonna facilitate. He's gonna score. He's gonna out hustle people. But yeah, they also have Miles Turner, who I think would definitely be in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation if he wasn't hurt. He had something like 3 blocks a game when he was playing. He was averaging something crazy like that. So it'll be interesting to see how these teams kind of match up. I think there's good opportunities for both teams to win here. The Pacers had a pretty disappointing regular season, I think. The past couple years, they've been pretty consistently 4 or 5 seed in the East. Haven't been great, but have been a good above average team. Who've been able to field a competitive roster and at least test a team in the playoffs. But this year, you know, they had a losing record. I believe their record was something like 34-38 or something like that. But the Pacers weren't too far behind. I think they were just like a game or two worse. So both teams had losing records this season, which I think is kind of interesting about the play-in. You're going to have some teams and some teams and organizations that are going to have losing records. I think it might be interesting when, and I think there's something to kind of combat this if there's like a big gap between the 8 and like the 9 seed, where if you have a team, maybe like let's say you're in the West, and the 8 seed in the West was the Warriors. They're a good team, right? They're going to put together, they're going to give, even if they win the play-in, they're going to give a team a fight in the series, a 7-game series. And let's say, like, you know, they're at the 8th seed, but then a team like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a not great team, but maybe like a team like, you have the Kings. You have some good pieces, but aren't necessarily the best below them. Like, kind of, what would happen then, right?
Yeah.
So I guess anyway, back to the Pacers and the Hornets. I think if I like make a prediction of who I think would win, I think it's have to be the Hornets. They're without Gordon Hayward, but still I think LaMelo, Rozier, and Devontae Graham, I think there's kind of gonna be too much for the Pacers.
Yeah, I feel like probably do really good triple threats. Just 3 really good players, and I want to see LaMelo Ball do good, just because he's rookie and everything. I'm even trying to carry the squad.
Yeah, he's been an exciting player. He's been pretty interesting to see how he kind of went from a player who in high school scored 100 points, I think it was, when he was at Chino Hills with Lonzo, LiAngelo. And then I think Onyeka Okongwu was also at the number 6 pick. But yeah, anyways, you know, they had a really good high school squad. But LaMelo's role on that team was kind of just to score. He would like stand behind the 3-point arc and just kind of chuck threes. And he was small enough at the time that his form was pretty awkward, and it's kind of translated over a little bit, but he would just kind of stand there and just, you know, chuck threes. They would kind of give him the lane to score, I guess. I don't know what I'm trying to say here, but he's really evolved as a player. He's become a lot more of a team player, I'd say, a better passer, and so yeah. So Carson, if you had a pick a victor in this game, who do you think it would be?
I think, like you, I'd probably go with the Hornets. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said earlier, Devontae Graham, Terry Rozier, and LaMelo. I feel like they can all, if they work together, they're all going to do really good. And, yeah, like I was saying earlier, too, I want to see LaMelo do good. I feel like it'll just be really cool to see him win this game and hopefully go on to more wins in the playoffs.
Yeah, how far do you think this team could go? Do you think that they could, because right where they are now, they would have to, if they win this game, they'd have to beat the winner of the, or the loser, excuse me, of the Celtics and the Wizards. Do you think they could sneak into the playoffs?
I don't know. Celtics or Wizards? That'd be a harder team. I don't know. I feel like definitely be hard.
Yeah, definitely.
For them to win one of those.
Yeah, maybe let's talk about the Celtics and the Wizards for a little bit. So, I guess I feel like these two teams are kind of pretty different. And I guess complete opposites That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
So the Celtics, on one hand, last year they went to the Eastern Conference Finals, played the Heat. They lost, obviously, but they were considered a finals contender for this year. You know, if their young players could progress a little more, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, they thought that they could, you know, people thought they could have a really good chance to compete for an NBA championship. And obviously, things have not gone according to plan because they're the 7th seed right now.
Yeah.
And then, on the other hand, you have the Wizards, who have kind of always been a team, or recently been a team, that's trying so hard to do good, but just can't. And they're basically, seems, well, not seems like, but they're having the results as like tanking almost would. You know, they lost John Wall. He's dealt with some big injuries and they traded him away. But they traded him for Russell Westbrook. And Russell Westbrook, I gotta admit, I kind of thought he was in the tail end of his career coming out of Houston, where he didn't have the best year of his career. But he's really came on the second half of the season since the All-Star break. He started kind of slow, but now he's he averaged a triple-double this year for, I think, the 4th year in 5 years.
Yeah, it's
fourth
crazy.
Time in 5 years.
Crazy how he's been doing.
Yeah, he's had some, like, crazy stat lines this season where he'll score, like, 14 points, but have, like, 20 rebounds and 20 assists. I think it's just insane. And then they also have Bradley Beal, who didn't win the scoring title, lost that to Stephen Curry, but was, like, half a point behind him or something like that. It was pretty close, and it came down to the final day of the regular season. But he's gotten a lot better in the last couple of years. He's gone from a guy that was kind of more of a pick-and-pop or an off-ball more type of player, but he's taken on more playmaking responsibilities. He's handling the ball more, stuff like that. So I think that's, like, a really scary team for the Celtics to go up against, because if Westbrook and Beal go off at the same time, they're both hot. I don't think there's any way that the Celtics beat them, especially because they lost Jaylen Brown for the rest of the year. Their second best player, and who many thought was a MVP candidate earlier in the year, he started off really good, ended up being an All-Star. But, you know, I think he broke his wrist. I think that's what it was. But he's going to be out for the year. And so I think everything just kind of rests on Jason Tatum right now, who had a good year as well, but hasn't really been able to carry his team.
Yeah. Especially he's playing against the Wizards with Bradley Beal and
Westbrook?
Yeah, Westbrook, sorry. But, yeah, Jason Tatum's really going to have to step up. Yeah, I feel like the Wizards pretty much have this one in the bag, though. I mean, yeah, the Wizards are probably going to win this one, I feel like.
Yeah, I feel like the Wizards do have some good pieces. And they have Davis Bertans, who's a great shooter. But I feel like I kind of have to disagree with you on this one, because even though the Celtics don't have Jaylen Brown, they do have Kemba Walker. They have a good bench. You know, Taco Fall, one of the greatest players of all time.
Yes.
But in all seriousness, they do have a deep team. Tristan Thompson hasn't been great for them this year, but I feel like they're too good of a team and have too much talent to not even make to lose in the play-in. I think at worst they end up playing the Sixers if they lose a game to the Wizards and then end up beating the winner of the Pacers and the Hornets. But I feel like they're just too good of a team to lose. So I think that's where I kind of got to disagree with you. So now, Carson. So, assuming that we both have the Pacers winning, correct?
Yeah.
Or Hornets, I mean.
Yeah, Hornets.
Yeah. So, assuming that, you know, the Hornets end up playing the loser of the Celtics and the Wizards, who do you think would win that matchup, right? We have the Hornets possibly playing the Wizards or the Celtics. Do you think there's... I know we kind of touched on this earlier, but do you think there's any situation where the Hornets end up sneaking in and playing the Sixers? In the seven-game series?
I mean, there's always a chance, but that's a really tough fight because Celtics and the Wizards, they're both a really solid team. Like you were saying, Celtics just have lots of talent, and Wizards, Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal, I mean, the Hornets, like, they have three guys really good, but I feel like, yeah, I don't think that they'll really be able to win a game like that. I mean, LaMelo's good, but it's his rookie season, and, you know, Russell Westbrook is a veteran. He's been in the playoffs before,
and he knows what he's doing. Yeah, I completely agree. I feel like the Hornets on whole are a little too inexperienced to really, really make it too far in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So transitioning to the West now. So for the first game, we have the... Well, I guess, so the later game is the Warriors and the Grizzlies. And then we have the Spurs and... Let's see, why can't I remember this team? We have the Spurs and the we have Spurs, Grizzlies, and then Warriors, Lakers. That's that's what it was. Yeah. I don't know why I couldn't remember that. Just couldn't remember the Lakers. I think I was thinking of how the Warriors and the Grizzlies played the other night. So we can start off with the Grizzlies and the Spurs. Carson, how about off the bat here, who do you think is going to win? Spurs or Grizz?
I don't know. I feel like it's a fair fight, and yeah, I don't really know who's going to win yet.
I'd say I'm definitely going to have to go with the Grizzlies because of John Morant. I think even though he's not the best shooter, he's just the energy he brings. The way he can make his teammates better, I think is kind of outdoes what the Spurs can do. Because the Spurs, they do have DeMar DeRozan. They do have Devin Vassell defensively. Jakob Poeltl. They have solid pieces, Patty Mills, Derek White. But I think they're just not, they don't have enough star power to really beat the, to beat the Grizzlies. Because the Grizzlies, they have Jonas Valanciunas, Dylan Brooks, Desmond Bane, who's been a lights-out shooter for them as a rookie coming out of TCU. I think they just have... And I'm even forgetting about Jaren Jackson Jr., who came back later on this year, who still is not 100%, I'd assume, but is still is a dangerous player to go up against. So I think the Grizzlies are definitely my pick here. I don't necessarily like the matchups the Spurs have against the Grizzlies. I think they kind of, there's some matchups that the Spurs, well, not the Spurs, but the Grizzlies can take advantage of, like like on the wings, Jaren Jackson. Dylan Brooks defensively, I think, I mean, yes, he does foul a lot, but I think he'll be able to lock, help lock down DeMar DeRozan, as well as Jaren Jackson Jr. So I think the Grizzlies kind of have this one. Now, the game that I'm most excited for, by far, out of all the playoff games, I think, is the Warriors and the LA Lakers.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for this, too. It's going to be cool to see, you know, the Warriors team, Steph Curry, against LeBron again. Because we haven't seen that matchup in a little bit. And, you know, the older finals games where LeBron would be on the Cavs and Steph Curry and the super team on the Warriors. This is going to be a really fun matchup.
Yeah, I think, I mean, and frankly, the only reason that the Lakers are even in the play-in is just because of injuries. I think if LeBron James and Anthony Davis had stayed healthy for at least the majority of the season, there's no way that they're dropping out of a top four seed in the Western Conference.
Yeah.
I mean, Anthony Davis was out for most of the season. LeBron was out for a good chunk. Dennis Schroeder, he was out for a while. And even with that, they still had a top three defense in the NBA. They have guys like Andre Drummond, Alex Caruso, who's actually been a really good defensive player this year. The bald eagle himself, Alex Caruso. But yeah, they just have, you know, they're a great team. Last year's NBA champions. And so, I think they don't necessarily really have any business being in the play-in game. But then, on the other side, I think this is a very losable game for the Lakers. Because the Warriors have Steph Curry. And he's arguably playing the best basketball of his life. I think a pretty crazy stat I saw a while ago was that this season, Steph Curry has, I believe, 10, we can be completely off on this, but 10 three-pointer games this season.
Wow.
And then the next most all-time is Klay Thompson with like 5.
That is crazy.
So he's just killing it this season. And his team is markedly worse than it's ever been. Klay Thompson got hurt again, and he's out for the year. Yeah, which unfortunately I really want to see Klay back, but he hasn't been playing this well. Draymond Green hasn't been playing well offensively. Andrew Wiggins has been fine, but their role players around Steph Curry hasn't been great. But I think if the Warriors do win this game, it's got to be Steph Curry. I think he's going to have to go off for like 40 points at least, but I don't necessarily have a lot of confidence in him doing that going against the Lakers. So I think the Lakers can win this one pretty handily.
Yeah. Just like you. Yeah. Really, the only way that if the Warriors are going to win, Steph Curry is going to, like, he's going to really need to step up because, you know, Klay Thompson's hurt, his, like, main partner. And, yeah, he's really going to have to step up if he wants to win this game for the Warriors. So, yeah, I feel like, yeah, the Lakers definitely pretty much have this in the bag. But, yeah. Really, there's a pretty slim chance the Warriors will win this.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty confident that the Lakers will get this one. And if they do win, then they're going to be playing the Suns, which I think will be a very interesting series. We can talk about that next week, I think. We can talk a little bit more about the actual playoff matchups.
Yeah.
So, Carson, if you're assuming that the Warriors are playing the winner of the Grizzlies and the Spurs. Let's say they're playing the Grizzlies. Mm-hmm. Who do you think is going to win? Because they just played to determine who would be the 8 seed a couple nights ago.
I'm sorry, what are the teams again?
Grizzlies, Warriors.
Okay, Grizzlies, Warriors. I feel like the Warriors are going to win that. I feel like they would win that. Their Grizzlies' main weapon is Ja Morant. I mean, like you were saying earlier, he's not the best shooter, but I mean, he's like really energetic player. He's good, but I feel like just Steph Curry with all of his experience and everything and how good he's doing right now, I feel like the Warriors would win this one.
Yeah, I think they have I think I'd take them against a matchup against the Grizzlies to play the Utah Jazz, which are an interesting team. But, Carson, is there anything else you want to talk about basketball, or do you want to transition to some baseball?
Let's talk about baseball.
Okay, so it was a big week for the Dodgers, I think. I'd say good and bad ways. So first of all, we've broken out of our slump a little bit. We've won our last, 7 out of 9 games.
Yeah, we've actually started playing like the team we should be playing as.
Yeah, we're playing to our talent. We're putting together good hitting days as well as good pitching days. Things are starting to come together. But then that said, Corey Seager broke his hand the other day and is out for a month. Which, if you think of all the players that the Dodgers have on the injured list right now, it's pretty crazy, Carson. So we have, pitching-wise, we have Dustin May, who's out for the year, Tony Gonsolin, and David Price, who I think would probably fill our fifth starter position that was voided by Dustin May, but he's not healthy, he's not playing right now. And then, I guess offensively, if you could call it that, even though they play defense too, but I think you know what I'm saying. Cody Bellinger has a hairline fracture in his leg. He should be coming back soonish. I think he's going on a rehab assignment, so he'll probably play some games with the Oklahoma City Dodgers, I think.
Yeah.
Or their AAA team. And then they have Zach McKinstry, who was recently reported that he can now sneeze with no pain, which I don't know if that is good news or bad news that it was so bad that it would hurt to sneeze. Which I think, yeah. Yeah, so, and he was playing really good as a rookie earlier in the year. And then Corey Seager, who's out for a month. So you now have your starting outfielders and your starting shortstop coming out. So it'll be interesting to see how the Dodgers can combat some of these injuries. Because, yeah, they just got to move some pieces around. They did make two moves this week. They signed Albert Pujols out of free agency, who had been released by the Angels earlier this year, which I think at the time seemed insignificant, and then later that night, of course, he got hurt, so it makes it a lot more significant. Instead of being a pinch hitter, Pujols is basically going to start almost every day now at first base, or hurl. He might come off the bench a little too, but yeah, he's probably going to start first, which bumps Max Muncy to second. Gavin Lux is playing short, and then Justin Turner's playing third to round out the infield. And then the other move they made was getting the Japanese player from the Rays, and I don't know if I can't remember his first name, but his last name's something like Tsutsugo or something like that.
Somewhere along those lines.
It's something like that. And then he's sort of an interesting player because they acquired him for, I think, it was like cash or like a player to be named later. So it wasn't much. But when he played in Japan, he I think he had a year where he had like 45 home runs, which is some good power, but with the Rays, he wasn't really able to do anything. And Tsutsugo's, he's actually starting today, I think, in left field. And so it'll be interesting to see how he plays, getting his first at-bats with the Dodgers. So, Carson, how do you see the Dodgers performing down the stretch, at least in the next month, when they probably will start getting a lot of their injured players back?
I mean, they've already been on this streak, which is, they've already been doing pretty good, but I feel like they probably take a little dip with all these injuries and everything, you know, because most of their main players are just gone. But once all their people who are injured coming back, I'm excited to see what's going to happen, because I feel like, yeah, they've just been on a little bit of hot streak, and hopefully they can keep that momentum. And yeah, I'm just excited to see, hopefully, a full and healthy team perform well.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping that the Dodgers can kind of be similar to the Yankees from a few years ago, where they would have a player go out with an injury, whether I think it was like Giancarlo Stanton, Miguel Andujar, and then they'd replace those guys with guys who had career years like Gio Urshela. Kind of waiting for that to happen, but I kind of doubt that's gonna happen. So they just really need to lean on their stars and their all-stars. And so that's gonna be Mookie Betts, Max Muncy, and Justin Turner. Now, Mookie Betts has had a down year hitting-wise. I'd say he's batting around 250, which isn't terrible. It's a good batting average, but far below his usual average. he's not playing great. He's not consistently getting extra base hits, hitting home runs. He's playing good defense, as always, but he's not bringing the same energy to the Dodgers, I'd say.
Yeah.
And then Justin Turner, he started out the year really hot, and he's cooled down a little bit. At one point, he was batting like 350, now he's batting like 290-something, He had a lot of home runs earlier in the year. Now he's sort of tailed off a little bit. As hasn't been producing as much, which is way different from Max Muncy, who has been playing lights out the last couple games. He was, early in the year, he had something like a 200 batting average, but like a 450 on base percentage, which I think really kind of speaks to the player he is. Because he'll probably go out and get, like, 30 home runs for you, and he'll get 80 RBIs. And he'll probably end up finishing this year at a average north of 250. But Max Muncy is going to get walked, and he's just going to get on base. I think his plate discipline and his vision are some of the best in the game. And Carson, you can sort of speak to this, I'd imagine, as somebody who's played baseball a lot more than I can. I'd imagine it's really hard to really see the ball come in and, yeah, just determine what's a ball, what's a strike, what to swing at,
yeah,
what to not swing at.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really great skill to have, if you can be able to determine balls and strikes as well as Max Muncy can. Yeah, he's a really, like, fundamental player, I feel like. Like, he may not be the flashiest, like, just hitting home runs and, like, doubles everywhere, but he's gonna be reliable. He's gonna get you singles. He's gonna get you walks. Like, you can rely on him to just get on base and do a good job.
And I think every team needs players like that. They need players that can just, whenever you need to, just hit a little blooper over the shortstop's head and just get on base. Get a grounder right up the middle. Just a player who consistently, when you need them to, produce. And they don't necessarily need to hit a home run, but just to get on base. Which, walks and singles, those turn into runs, right? Yeah. And so I think that's just what Max Muncy does so well, is he just produces. I would say no matter what even if he's not hitting great, he's still going to get on pace for you, which I think is good. And he's been playing good defense this year at first base. So now, Carson, I wanted to talk a little bit about the umpiring this year. And this comes directly requested from our grandpa. He wanted to hear us talk about this. And my grandpa is like the biggest Dodgers fan I know. And he knows far more than I do. And watches far more Dodgers baseball than I do.
Yes.
And so I can't say I can speak specifically and like point to a bunch of different examples of bad umpiring this year, but I've definitely noticed bad umpiring this year. In the games I've watched, there's definitely been some questionable calls, some interesting takes, and just some overall not great umpiring. And it's beyond the usual few guys you can kind of point to and be like, yeah, he's going to kind of mess up a little bit, like the Angel Hernandez's of the umpiring community. There's definitely been some interesting things going on. Carson, what do you think about just bad umpiring in general?
Well, you know, I mean, nobody really likes a bad umpire because, you know, they're making decisions for the whole game, and they really, their calls, I mean, they turn the tide in games, you know, like they're deciding runs, outs, walks, hits, and yeah, I feel like just a bad umpire, it's not really fun to watch, you know, because you know that they're making bad calls and they're maybe getting the other team struck out all the time, even though it's not really a strikeout and the team's playing, but the umpire is just almost ruining the game for them.
Yeah, you always hear about bad officiating and umpiring, but you don't necessarily ever hear about good officiating and umpiring. And I think part of it is, you know, just this, the way the umpires are seeing the strike zone, it's just kind of changing a little bit depending on the game. It's kind of expanding and contracting. And so one thing people have brought up is electronic strike zones, having some computer determine the balls and the strikes. And Carson, I don't know if you know this, but we actually went to a baseball game where they had this.
Yeah.
So near where we live, there's a team from a baseball league, and they're not in the minor leagues, but it's a MLB affiliate league. And they actually used electronic umpiring, which is interesting to see the way they had it set up, is they had, you know, some cameras and sensors or whatever. And there was an umpire behind on the catcher, like there always is, and he would call the obvious balls and strikes. But then when it was a close call, he had like an AirPod in and somebody on the other line telling him what the computer said, if it was a ball or a strike. And I'm sure they would kind of refine this process in the major leagues. But how do you feel, Carson, about a game where the call is always going to be right?
Well, I guess there's two sides of it, you know? Like, there's a side where it'll make games almost more productive and where it's, like, just a skill, and there's no, like, getting really mad at the umpire, like, that was such a terrible call. But then I feel like, also, with umpiring, there's, like, just a human part to it, you know?
Yeah,
like,
kind of like the human error.
Yeah, like, I feel like the games, it's not supposed to be made to where everything's supposed to be perfect all the time, you know? Like, yeah, they're just supposed, like you just said, like, human error, like, that's just a normal thing in the game.
Yeah, I think the ability of, yeah, I think just human error, I really like. And Clayton Kershaw brought this up a little bit, and he talked about it too. He likes the fact that the correct decision isn't always going to be made. There's going to be mistakes. And I think it's really frustrating when the mistakes are against your team, and it's kind of satisfying when they help you out. But no matter what happens, I just kind of like, yeah, the fact that basically anything can happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, Carson, anything else you'd like to add about officiating baseball in general?
No, I think we pretty much covered most of it, or all of it.
Yeah, so I think this is set for this episode of the Laces podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, we went over some plan preview. Talk about Dodgers a little bit, electronic strike zones, the umpiring this year. So I think we're signing off for now.
Yeah.
See you next week.
See ya.